This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Felicity Carter from Mining a Business Weekly, isn't it?
Mining a Wine Business International.
Mining a Wine Business International. So Mining is a magazine.
We're a bi-monthly magazine. We also have a very dynamic online website and we're part of a publishing house called Mining a Verlag, which is 119 years old, 115 years old, and it's Europe's biggest dedicated wine and spirits publishing house.
Okay. Mining it doesn't sound like it's something from California or the UK. Where are they based?
We're based in Neustadt an der Weinstraße in Germany, which is good Riesling country.
Where is that?
It's in the Rhineland-Pfalz.
Pfalz. Okay.
So we're on the border with Alsace.
Okay. Okay, so the bottom end of Pfalz. Oh, lovely, lovely. Been there. It's quite a nice area.
It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's very pretty. Okay, what we're going to talk about is a bit about Mining it, because it's a magazine I've read in the past, and to be honest, it's very business-focused.
It's very business-focused.
And I'm a little bit wishy-washy, consumer-y type person in terms of the consumption I read. You know, I read Harper's and things like that, which are competitors to you guys. And I have read Mining in the past, but I found it a little bit dry. But I'm sorry about that. But I've been on your website recently, and I was going through it, and I was actually quite impressed, because I know the quality of the journalism is very high, and the articles are very well written, and they're quite good, because even the news that you have on your website isn't just sort of the press release. It adds other content to that. So I thought the quality of the journalism is very good. But it is a little bit quite austere.
I don't know. We've done a lot of work in the last year, particularly to look at what readers want and to deliver things that they really want. It can be a bit of a problem because to do good business journalism, you need a different set of skills than most wine writers have got. Mm-hmm. But a business writer can't do it because you need quite an in-depth knowledge of wine. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of work to make our content very, very readable. Yeah, we've also done a lot of work because we have an international audience. We have subscribers in about 35, 38 different countries. We've done a lot of work on English to make sure it's readily understood by people who have English as a second language.
That's probably why. That's probably what I'm thinking, because it does lack a little of the flounciness that you sometimes get with wine journalism.
Well, we actually encourage narrative nonfiction. We have some really good writers writing some very compelling pieces. But in general, we do tend to strip out metaphor, or we do tend to strip out colloquialisms because they're not understood by people who have English as a second language.
Yeah, I think that's what I was probably noticing on it. Not I wasn't aware of that, but there was something that I didn't quite follow. Okay, no, that's cool. And how long's Mining been going for?
Well, it's been going before I started, so it's been going for about 14 years, I think. Mm-hmm. It's got quite a long history now.
Yeah. 14, I'm sure I've heard of it before that, but I'm obviously
you not. May have heard of the publishing house that owns it, which is quite well known inside Europe,
okay.
Though less well known in the English-speaking world.
Okay. And the thing about Mining is that this will sound silly, but it's actually the quality of the – it's almost like a book – of the magazine is actually quite, you know, like you, some magazines, they just sort of print it and they fold it over and they staple it down the middle and that's it. But yours is all bound and it's quite a flash piece of...
Yeah, it's very high quality paper. The idea is that the quality of the content that we have inside is something that you'll want to keep. There's a lot of market data. There's a lot of information about how to run a wine business. And so we know that people keep it. Also, a lot of wine libraries at universities keep it. So we use paper that is good... that will last, that won't decay really quickly.
Yeah. I think that's exactly on the nail, isn't it? Because the content isn't always, when I say timely, that's not the right word, but it's not transient.
We're not news driven.
Yes, that's probably a better way of describing it, isn't it? Yeah, so the content tends to be quite factual and quite relevant, but also not what's the latest. Although you've got a news section on your website, which I went through yesterday, and it was quite good.
We do. Well, what we try and do is, my editorial philosophy is that the whole world knows they need to export But most people have no idea how to do it. The big companies do, of course. But small and medium-sized companies know that they need to get out and they need to sell to China and they need to sell to Russia and maybe they need to think about South Korea. And they don't even know where to start. So what we do is we try and break down the world. And we do it – we give really high-quality information. So we don't just say, here's the route to market in Denmark. We'll actually give you the names of the buyers in Denmark. We'll tell you what their preferences are. We'll tell you how to approach them. We'll tell you what sort of price points you need. So in that way, it's all about really practical information.
Yeah, so I suppose if on your website you've got a section that talks about that, it gives that sort of information. I think you've got to be a subscriber to access that. I think, you know, from an indexing and searchability point of view, the website's probably more useful for someone trying to access that information, perhaps.
If you buy a subscription, you get both online and you get the print access as well.
That's right.
So yeah. So, but the print, what we've learned from the print is people actually still like passing it around. And there is a thing with comprehension when information is quite dense, or if there's a lot you need to know, people's comprehension is actually better if it's in print than if it's online. So when you have to write for online differently. So the stuff that we write online is a lot more, it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more easy to digest. You can read it in a hurry, whereas that's not true with the magazine. Not that the magazine's hard to read. It's just that it's a different type of information.
It sounds like it's mainly wine companies looking to export that are involved.
We have three different audiences. Yep. So the first audience is we have C-suite people, people who are at a very high level in very big companies. And they read it sometimes to see what their competitors are doing, or they read it to look at – we have quite a lot of really good market data in the magazine. So if you want to know about what's going on in, I don't know, Russia at any given time, our information can sometimes be a lot better than the commercial reports because we take it from people who live in the market, so they really understand it. So that's our first group. The second group is producers who are looking to export. We have a small number of key buyers in some of the new countries like China. Who are looking for global trends, and our magazine is a really good way to see that. And then our third big segment of the audience is MW students who are looking for information for their exams.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. So do you get a lot of MW students?
We get a huge number of them. So the Institute recommends that we Institute recommends to MW students that they subscribe to us, which we give them a discount for it. So we've actually done a lot of work. We actually liaised with the Institute to look at what they need to get through their exams, and we put information in every issue which will be useful for them. So, for example, MW students are often asked to give examples of producers who make things a certain way. So if we're covering a region, we'll give two examples of a traditional way of making it and a non-traditional way of making it so that they can use that as an example in their exams.
Oh, really? Oh, that is very good, isn't it? I create a lot of my interviews and I create content for WST students. I'm not quite as highbrow as you, obviously, but I try and like, I've done a series of interviews today looking at stuff that's designed specifically for diploma students. My listeners will listen to it and they'll find it quite interesting, but really it's, you know, diploma students are the people who will lap it up. Because it's all geared towards that, whereas you're sort of the same idea, but now you're pitching it at the sort of top end of the academic tree, so to speak.
Yeah, we don't just have that sort of information. So the magazine is about a third market data. It's about a third data for other people. And then we know that the majority of people will read it in an airport. So there's a whole lot of stuff. There's a whole lot of stuff that people is just, so if you're stuck in an airport, you might enjoy reading. So there's a fun side to it as well.
Airport. It's not available in the WIC calls and all those sort of places.
No. But people, when they're travelling, they especially if they're executives, they do all of their reading on planes. So our competitors are actually not other wine magazines. Our competitors are the free Wi-Fi at Starbucks and the free copy of the Financial Times. Those are my competitors that I have to beat.
Okay, so you do a lot of market insight for wine. So you've obviously done quite a lot of work on your insights for your own business.
Yeah.
And You said that you've got data from different regions of the world. How do you group them, you know, the different regions? Do you have do you say there's Asia, there's America, and there's Europe, or do you break it down more finely? How do you sort of divide the world up?
We don't think about it in those terms. What we try and do is we think about markets that people really want to know about. And also we specialise a little bit in markets that can be opaque for Westerners to get into. So, for example, we used Deborah Myberg, MW, in Hong Kong, has built a whole media empire there by going into the markets of Southeast Asia and really understanding them from the bottom up. And so She is a superb resource for us. So she will write about what's going on in South Korea, not just from the wine point of view, but what's going on culturally, what you need to know about doing business in South Korea. We do have a writer in South Korea who can also interpret all the government figures and the news that's going on. It's the same. We have writers from Russia that can tell us, you know, Russia can be really opaque and difficult, who can break it down city by city, because St. Petersburg will be drinking very differently from what is happening in Moscow.
Okay.
So that's quite different from other publications, which kind of parachute somebody in to get a very superficial idea of what's going on and then get back out again.
Okay, so you've got experts in the regions themselves?
Yeah, we've got about 30 different freelancers around the world that we use, and we prefer people who live and work in the region they're reporting on rather than people who are just doing a press trip to get in and get out.
Okay, that's cool. Anybody in Australia?
Yes, we have Jenny Port.
I think being Australian yourself, you might be your...
No, because the time zone's wrong and I don't get to visit Australia very much. But we use Jenny Port, who for many years was one of the big star reporters on The Age, which is a national newspaper there. So she's a...
Melbourne, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. She's a classic, hardcore, hard-ass journalist who doesn't pull punches when she asks questions.
Nice. I know journalists don't like to talk about this. What sort of subscription numbers have you guys got?
At the moment, it's round about, it fluctuates around about 10,000, which is very small. But what we have is we have a subscription base that's extremely valuable. So we have, obviously I can't tell you who, but we have some very, we have very key buyers in some of the key markets. We're getting increasing penetration into the US. That's a smaller market for us at the moment. But we have all of the big people in Germany, readers across continental Europe. We have a huge readership in Italy. We have a very long-standing subscriber in Serbia, Montenegro. We've got two in Finland. So they're all over the place.
Okay. It's interesting you talk about Italy, because one of the things, I don't know about your view, but I've been at Wine to Wine now for, this is my second trip, and I was... talking to Fabio Piccoli from Wine Meridian. I think they're not quite a competitor to you, but he was telling me a bit about, they've got another business called Wine People, where they find people to work for wine companies, if you like. They're like an HR company for wine. And he was telling me about sort of the things that the Italians are looking for in terms of the export managers, and they're having trouble finding people to achieve those sort of roles internationally. And it's quite interesting. The Italians do seem to be, especially as what you're saying as well, they seem to be quite export-focused, a lot more than maybe if you talk to a French person or something like that.
Yeah, the Italians are really good. They're really creative, but they're also very good. What the Italians are excellent at is unlocking some of the EU funds. The EU has something called third-country funding,
yes,
which is they will help you promote your products, but getting the money out of the EU is a killer. It can take a dedicated person up to 3 months just to write the proposals. And so it's almost an impossible hurdle for most people to surmount. But here in Italy, they actually have businesses that are dedicated to getting that. So the Italians have been very, very good about getting the resources right and getting out and getting on the road. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm pleased you said that, because that was my sort of gut feel as well, that they were... And Fabio, I'd never heard of this extra money that the EU gives third party. You know, it's not for sale of wine within the EU. It's
no,
only
that's right.
Export. And I'd never heard of it before. And this is the second time in the same day, within 3 hours, that I've heard the same story.
If you look at American wine magazines, they're often full of Italian advertising. And the reason they are is because of that third country funding.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it is a killer to get that money. So the Italians have developed particular expertise in it, which is really good.
And the EU doesn't care. It's about the quality of the proposal, as opposed to we've given so much money to the Italians, no one else.
That's a good question. I don't actually know, but there is a large pool of money available. But you know, talk to people about you know, going through the process, and you need a dedicated person who does nothing except deal with the EU. And most businesses haven't got that, so
yeah,
it's just out of the question.
I was actually talking to Lawrence Francis from Interpreting Wine last time, and I was saying, like, as a small business person in the UK, there are grants available to me, but I'm just not worth the effort for me to even bother applying, because I know I'll spend more time trying to apply for it than to actually get it. So.
Well, you know, people in Britain may do very well out of Brexit, because then they'll become a third country, and people can, you know, if you're a magazine in Britain, they may well be the beneficiary of some of that that promotional money.
Yeah. Just on Brexit, because you guys have got a good feel for it, what's the sort of magazine's position on this?
Our position is that it's a complete mess. I don't know how they're going to untangle themselves from the EU. Nobody knows. I don't have a crystal ball on that. It's so difficult to understand. I think one of the things that people have to be concerned about is whether there will be an uptick in smuggling into the EU, into the UK after Brexit. Because at the moment, as I understand it, all of the trucks, everything that goes onto a truck that goes through France, it's logged. They know what it is. But once Brexit happens, all of the software that customs people use across the continent will be turned off in the UK, so they won't necessarily know what's on every truck that's coming into the UK. No. So I think that could be an issue for alcohol.
Oh, yeah. The smuggling issue. Although there used to be a lot of smuggling of wine into the UK by people going over to France, by filling up a white van and coming back.
Well, cross-border trade is strictly it's a kind of smuggling, but it's not...
By making it all...
It's terribly... It's normally very cheap wine that they do that. But, but if you don't know what's coming in, people can smuggle wines of all kinds of different values. I think that's probably a big concern with Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a hard Brexit, there'd be an economic decline in the UK and, you know, there'd be all sorts of problems. But London still remains one of the most important places in the world to trade wine.
Mm.
And that's not going to change unless somehow the government rips up all the legislation around bonded warehouses and so on in the UK.
Okay. So you think that from a wine trading business point of view...
From a fine wine trading business point of view.
Fine wine trading business point of view, that the influence won't be as important...
No, because the infrastructure exists in the UK in a way that it doesn't exist elsewhere. And, you know, there are the big question is about things like the bottling plants that Accolade have got. There's a lot of bulk wine.
Bristol.
Yeah, in Bristol, that's right. So there's a lot of wine flowing into the UK to be bottled. How will that change after Brexit? You know, will all of that wine be diverted to Germany, which is, also has bottling things? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
You said you're earlier, before you started, you did radio journalism beforehand.
I didn't do it professionally. When I studied journalism, we did radio journalism as part of that, which I enjoyed hugely. But then after I graduated, I ended up in print. So.
And have you always been in print of wine or just...
No, I started as a general feature writer. So I've written about everything I've written about. I did a lot of scientific and medical reporting, which I really enjoyed. I've reported on the funeral industry, which was fun. I used to write about dogs for a magazine called Bark. I used to write about dog trends. So I've done quite a lot besides writing about wine.
So when you made the move to wine, how did you upskill yourself in that?
Well, I'd started 20 years ago working for a company called Cellar Masters in Sydney, and I used to write their brochures for them.
Oh,
and they did some in-house wine training. So, of course, I thought I knew a great deal about wine, as you do when you know very little about a big topic. And so after September 11, I got interested in journalism. So I went and retrained as a journalist. I went and did graduate journalism. And I started pitching stories. And one of the ones I pitched was to The Age, was about wine, and they bought it. Now, what happens in Australia when you get published in a major metropolitan newspaper is all the public relations people suddenly take notice of you and you start getting invited to things and whatever. And it quickly became apparent that I didn't know anything about wine. So in order to sort of keep a foot in this exciting world, I used to have to just go home at night and study. I would just study huge amounts about it. But I didn't intend to be a wine journalist. But then this opportunity to work in Europe came up, so I took it.
And one of your colleagues is Robert Joseph, who's a reasonably well-known wine critic and wine writer, etc. What does he do in mining it?
Well, he was instrumental in setting it up in the first place.
Oh, it's his baby.
No, it's not his baby, but when the publisher wanted to do it, Robert was one of the advisors who helped to set it up. Robert also helped to set up Mundusvini, which is the wine competition that our company runs. And so... Robert, in the early days, was kind of a liaison with the rest of the world because his knowledge about the world is so enormous. He knew all the writers to contact. He knew people in different markets. And he's just a really good fit because he travels so much. He knows what's going on. So he writes a weekly column for us online and he does a column for the magazine as well.
Okay. Tell us about your wine competition. Which is it?
It's called Mundusvini. It's been running for...
That's not the French one, Mondevin.
No, you're thinking of Concours Mondial.
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, Mondesfini is run by us, and I believe it's the biggest competition in Europe. It's got so big now that we run it twice a year just to cope with the number of
samples. Bigger than IWC?
I don't know. I think inside Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know about against the UK competitions, which are enormous. But we have the wine competition is so massive that we have a warehouse that does nothing that except receive samples. We've got warehouse staff who are dedicated to sorting out samples for our various tastings and whatever. So it's very international. It was originally done under what's called OIV rules, which is a very continental style of judging. But it can also be very rigid. So what we do now is what's called a modified OIV, where it's all judged silently. There's not a lot of discussion between judges, though there is some. But you know the variety, and you know something about the wine before it turns up.
Yeah, yeah. So you know maybe the region and the variety and alcohol.
Well, you don't know the region, but the variety, and you know the sugar level, which is really important to Germans. Mm. So, but it's an international competition. So we get of the judges. I don't know how many judges we've got. There's a lot, 150, 300, I think, depending on the competition. But they're from all over the world.
Okay, I haven't heard of that competition, so you're not publishing it very well in the UK, the results.
One of the interesting things about working in Germany is the Germans are not very good at self-promotion. It's something that is almost anathema. So within Germany, within Europe, it's heavily promoted, because you've got to understand, I work for a really big publishing house that inside the continent is extremely well known.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be less point in us promoting it in the UK, because the UK has really big competitions with Decanter and so on.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thanks very much, Felicity.
Thank you very much for your time.
No, not a problem. Cheers very much.
Thank you.